panel has before today five cases, three of which are being argued and two of which are being submitted on the briefs. I will just note for the record the two cases that are being submitted on the briefs. The first one is number 2008-3161, Ziegler versus the Merit Systems Protection Board. And the second case is number 2008-3248, Morrissey versus the Department of the Treasury. Again, those two cases are being submitted on the briefs. The first case in which we'll hear oral argument this morning is number 2007-3295, Campbell v. Guerin. And Ms. Belchin?
Yes.
You ready to begin?
Yes.
Okay, come on up. I just want to confirm, you're using 12 minutes for your main argument and 3 for rebuttal?
Yes, that's correct.
And you understand how the lighting system works?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, you can start whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Belcher and I represent the plaintiff appellant, William E. Campbell, in this matter. Both parties agree that this court lacks jurisdiction to hear the issues presented. Both parties also agree that Mr. Campbell presented cognizable Title VII claims in his district court complaint.
Can I ask a preliminary question? As I understand your brief, you're in essence renewing the motion to transfer the case back to the Eastern District. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah.
And if I understand the situation correctly, the bone of contention on the line of dispute between you and the government at the moment is whether or not there's any jurisdiction in the district court over the Title VII claim.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand the government, they're conceding that there's no jurisdiction in this court, regardless of how you dial it. I mean, Campbell's petition for review here was more than 60 days after the final decision of the board, right? So under OJA, there's no jurisdiction there. And we clearly don't have any jurisdiction over Title VII.
Yes, Your Honor.
So,
and you conceded all other issues but Title VII.
Yes, Your Honor, we have. And we contend that the Eastern District of Virginia erroneously transferred this matter to this court.
Because I take your argument to be that Mr. Campbell was proceeding pro se in the Eastern District of Virginia. And because he was pro se, may have failed to understand what he had to say in order to vest jurisdiction over the Title VII claim there.
Yes, Your Honor.
Footnote 1 in Judge Brinkman's opinion on the transferor opinion certainly suggests that she was of the view that the court lacked Title VII jurisdiction, right?
I disagree, Your Honor. The Eastern District of Virginia, in that footnote, did not issue a final appealable dismissal order.
Well, I understand. I don't disagree with you on that. It's clear that you don't have a final order there. But in her footnote, she says, if I'm not mistaken, that she believed that, accordingly, she said, Title VII claims are not properly brought before and can't serve as a basis for exercising jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor, she did state that. However, she made that determination without providing Mr. Campbell, who was proceeding pro se at that time, with an opportunity to amend his complaint, and she made that determination without seeing...
Is this a sua sponte order?
Yes, it is.
And so I gather, and I'll ask the government the same thing, I gather what the government's hoping we will do here is to bury your client's case once and for all, because if we were to dismiss the case and not transfer it back, then you might have a high hill to climb if you tried to refile in the district court, wouldn't you?
We agree, Your Honor, because at this juncture, if this court were to dismiss our claim, then our client would have essentially one day to refile in the Eastern District. Essentially, a dismissal of this court is a dismissal with prejudice. And our client, Mr. Campbell, has yet to adjudicate his Title VII claims. He deserves that opportunity. And for that reason, we ask this court to retransfer his Title VII claims to the district court. And as I mentioned, I had 3 points that I wanted to bring forth to support our request. And the first is that Mr. Campbell filed a pro se complaint in the Eastern District, a complaint that clearly informed the district court his Title VII claims. He invoked the jurisdiction of the court not once, but twice, specifically referring to the statute that governs Title VII. He listed adverse employment actions, including failure to promote, transfer from one state to another, hostile work environment, all in support of his Title VII claims. The Eastern District of Virginia, as we've discussed, sua sponte transferred the entirety of that claim to this court. Our client did not receive the special solicitude granted to pro se plaintiffs. The body of case law that we cited on our brief puts forth that special solicitude. Pro se complaints are not to be held to the same standard as those drafted by attorneys.
Did the complaint before the district court either mention or attach a copy of the notice to sue letter?
No, Your Honor, it did not. No, it did not. And certainly Mr. Campbell has that letter, and if provided with an opportunity to amend, or if the court had inquired for that letter, he could have attached it.
Well, your brief with Judge Brinkman, the transfer order, if I understand you correctly, is that it was sua sponte and your client, unrepresented by counsel, didn't have any opportunity to say back to the judge, wait a second, there's another side to the facts in this case, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. So the Eastern District sua sponte transferred the entire matter to this court. And as mentioned in our brief with the pro se case law, it's an abuse of discretion, it's an error on behalf of that court to make what appears.
But in order to kick it back to the Eastern District under the law, the normal law is that you put your thumb on the scale in favor of the court that made the transfer. And there's some sort of presumptive correctness, isn't there? So we have to find the Brinkman, which is dead wrong, right?
I disagree in the dead wrong, Your Honor, but the standard that exists is that this court has the ability and authority to review the transfer order, and if it finds that it's clearly erroneous and works a manifest injustice, this court can retransfer in interest of justice. And here, I think that it's obvious this is clearly erroneous.
Let me ask you this question because it'll give the government something to think about while it's waiting to stand up at the lectern. As I understand the government's position, and I don't think you made this point quite this way in your brief, the government is asking us, this court, to adjudicate that there is no valid Title VII claim in the district court. Isn't that what they're asking us to say?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do we have jurisdiction to do that?
No, it is our position.
Jurisdiction of the subject matter.
Correct, Your Honor. It is our understanding, or our statement in our brief, that this court lacks jurisdiction to make a determination on the merits. And at this juncture, that's what's left in this Title VII claim. And to the extent the government raises affirmative defenses, those again are within the jurisdiction of the district court. And indeed, the government did not have the opportunity to even file a responsive pleading in the Eastern District of Virginia. So those affirmative defenses were not even at that early juncture of the record available.
No answer to the file yet?
No answer. This court, in less than 30 days after receiving this case, transferred it sua sponte. No answer.
So all that you're saying, all that we have jurisdiction to do is to decide the motion to retransfer the case back to the Eastern District. Or all we can do, you would say, is decide the propriety of the transfer.
Yes, Your Honor. The second point that I would mention in support of our request is that the transfer order itself is clearly erroneous. As we've discussed, the Eastern District had jurisdiction over this matter, over these Title VII claims, and although inartfully pled...
We don't know that. Why is your argument in favor of jurisdiction on the Title VII claim any better than the government's argument that there's not? I mean, I don't know whether the proper requisites for exhaustion of remedies have been satisfied. I don't know what the law of the Fourth Circuit is on that point. The law in some circuits is very generous to a pro se applicant who's trying to mount a Title VII claim. So basically, if you sort of spit in the wind toward the EEO, that was a satisfaction of exhaustion of remedies. There are other circuits that are more rigid. Why is it enough for you simply to say it's an open question and you're entitled to have it adjudicated by the only court in the setting that has the authority to do so?
Your Honor, it's our position that to the extent that there may be some deficiencies, those are for the Eastern District of Virginia to decide. And at this juncture, the court did not make a determination, and our client was not allowed to respond to any raised deficiencies.
My point is that if you're going to argue with me very, very seriously that you know that the district court had jurisdiction over the EEO claim, then I'm going to say, well, why shouldn't I respond to the government and decide it right here and put your client out of his misery if I decide that there is no jurisdiction in Title VII?
With all due respect to
the court. You don't want that. I mean, the most you can gain out of this here is a transfer back to the Eastern District, right?
Yes, and Your Honor, that is what we seek. We seek a transfer back from the district court to adjudicate the merits of the claims and determine any affirmative defenses the government may raise once the government has the opportunity to file a response in the district court.
Now, I take it part of your argument that Mr. Campbell wants to mount is that in the interstices of the settlement agreement that was event that led to the dismissal of this MSPB case, that there are discrimination issues that need to be adjudicated in connection with the entry into the settlement agreement. And is that, you can't, I'm not certain that Judge Brinkman appreciated, because your client was pro se, what the sort of complexion of the discrimination claim were.
Yes, Your Honor. We agree that Judge Rinker did not realize the extent of these discrimination claims. And again, she sua sponte transfer without providing our client the opportunity to inform her in more detail of those claims. As mentioned, the second point that I wanted to make is that the transfer order itself was erroneous. The district court transferred Title VII claims to this court, which, with all due respect to this court, does not have jurisdiction to make a merits determination on those claims.
In fairness to the good judge, she didn't think she was transferring a Title VII claim. She thought she was transferring an employee decision complaining about a 28-day suspension. That's what she says in her order.
I agree, Your Honor. If she had provided our client with the opportunity to amend his complaint or to respond to any deficiencies, she would have been informed that this was a Title VII action and not an MSPB action.
Well, what you're saying to us is consistent with the additional authority you filed in the court a couple of days ago, or the district court, I gather, that recognized what the situation was and understood what was going on. You're saying, had you been representing Mr. Campbell in front of Judge Brinkman, and had you been given notice of the fact that she was going to consider issuing a transfer order when she was considering an informal pauperous petition, you would have stood up and told her, hello, Judge, this is not an MSPB case. We
yes.
waive all of our MSPB claims, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is a huge error that occurred in the district court.
In fairness to Judge Brinkman, she was confronting a pro se complaint with, shall we say, a boatload of issues that had all the appearances of an appeal from the MSPB. Now, you've taken a more informed posture in this case in focusing on the Title VII aspect to the exclusion of everything else. And with that, with the clarity of that more focused view, then the jurisdictional question is a little bit easier to discern, and perhaps Judge Brinkman might not have made the same decision.
Well, we agree, Your Honor. We think that if she had been provided with additional facts upon an amended complaint or with the attachment of the EEOC right to sue letter, that she would have decided differently. We agree.
And you're not necessarily asking us to make that jurisdictional determination, but asking us to at least recognize that the jurisdictional issue is one she should consider, and that might properly vest jurisdiction before the district court.
Yes, Your Honor, that is our position. The third.
Thank you, Ms. Scotia. You're into your rebuttal time. Why don't we hear from the governor? We'll restore your full 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Away from the government. Mr. Boyd, we'll give you, if you need it, 18 minutes so that you'll have the total
all right.
time.
I don't think that
Ms. Belcher will have.
May it please the court. This
This is one of those unusual circumstances where both sides agree this court doesn't have any jurisdiction. So the only question is, what does
it mean? Well, we have a limited jurisdiction.
You have jurisdiction to determine whether the transfer was proper.
That's right.
But there's no merit.
And the entirety of your case, when you're asking us simply to dismiss once and for all, not to transfer, the entirety of your case is your view that there is no jurisdiction over any Title VII claim in the Eastern District.
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court has made that determination. There's no jurisdiction over the Title VII there. There's no jurisdiction in this court because of the timeliness factor. There's just simply no jurisdiction over Mr. Campbell's complaints at this point.
Well, the problem you've got there is that the sentence upon which you're hanging your entire hat is in the footnote that says, accordingly, claims Title VII claims are not properly listed and can't serve as a basis for explaining the constitutional claims and the SPB appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, that plaintiff wasn't mounting an MSPB appeal.
Except that his right to sue letter was upon the MSPB
decision. He used the word MSPB appeal. Maybe he labeled it wrong. He's pro se.
My understanding, Your
Honor. Now, let me ask you this question. How do I don't know anything about Title VII? I don't know a thing. I don't even know what's in it. Okay? It's not like 103 of the Patent Act. I can recite, you know, obviousness to you inside out. I can tell you about government contracts. I can tell you about all. I can't tell you beans about Title VII. So why on earth do I have the authority to decide whether or not Judge Brinkman was wrong when she said no jurisdiction?
The important thing, Your Honor, is you don't have to. She has already decided the matter, which is why she transferred it to this court. Because remember, the condition preceding to transfer under 1631.
You don't cut any slack to a pro se litigant, do you?
I beg your pardon, sir?
You don't cut any slack to a pro se litigant.
I disagree with that. The problem here is the pro se is entitled to amend his complaint.
Is the Justice Department overworked today?
Your
understanding is that the Justice Department, just like us, is on a continuing resolution. I have former law clerks that are working over there that are saying that if there are just not enough bodies to go around, that they're running around trying to borrow from one division to another to find bodies to be engaged in the important matters of state.
That may very well be the case, Your Honor.
This is a great investment of the Justice Department's time for you to mount this gripe over this case?
First point is, the policy questions, I have to admit, are beyond it. I don't really look at those all that often. With respect to the jurisdiction...
You never just sit down and say, you know, it's a waste of resources for us to be messing with this.
Your Honor, I have not personally had that conversation.
Should I write a letter to Director Davidson? You can hear what I'm beefing. Whom should I address my complaint? You're not the right guy. I understand that.
You can. I will be more than glad to listen.
I'm picking on you.
That's okay. I'm just understanding. But now the problem here is, or the question here is, one of jurisdiction. And jurisdiction is a very important matter to the department. Obviously, we wouldn't be here. The question becomes one, though, of the district court made its decision. Now, it incorrectly sent the case here, but this may be an example of no good deed goes unpunished. She could have just outright dismissed Mr. Campbell's complaint.
And then Mr. Campbell could
gone to the Fourth Circuit. That's correct. That's exactly right. Which is why, if you remember in the footnotes, we alluded to the possibility that maybe the Fourth Circuit is the proper jurisdictional consideration.
Assuming that we grant you the relief you wish, and assuming that Mr. Campbell, now protected by counsel, tried to refile a Title VII complaint in the Eastern District, you surely would meet that with a motion to dismiss on claim preclusion ground, wouldn't you?
That would be my expectation, sir.
So now, the question is whether or not we're willing to throw the last few shovels full of dirt on top of the coffin here.
Well, I don't think that's the
Why
way that I would put it, sir.
We're
but I think
out. We've got a pro se litigant, right? And down there. And we've got this pro se litigant was non-suited, if you would, by Judge Brinkman on a sua sponte order that came up in connection with an informal pauperis petition. Right?
Well, let me back up just for a second. You have a pro se litigant who entered into a settlement agreement in which these matters were resolved.
Well, we're entering into a settlement agreement which, with the benefit of counsel, Mr. Campbell says is an unlawful settlement agreement.
That's a totally new argument, sir. That has not been presented anywhere in any form except here on this appeal. If I understand this court's precedent, that's not the proper way to do this, irrespective of whether he's pro se or represented by counsel. So these are whole new arguments that neither the board nor the EEO was presented.
And actually, under our precedent, it probably would have been an okay argument if mounted pro se, but not by counsel.
That's very possible.
Well, Mr. Moyne, the settlement agreement is, there is this, Campbell says that he understood from some cross-outs that took place in paragraph 10 of the settlement agreement, page 72 of the joint appendix, that he makes the argument that he understood from this that he could take his discrimination claim over to the EEOC. And what had to come to here, if anything, but he'd settled, what only properly could have come here would have been a challenge to whether there actually was harassment. But I mean, you do have to page 72 of the joint appendix, the settlement agreement, where it says rights related to the relevant issues of MSPB docket number. Now, what he could say the relevant issues are, he's waiving those, but a matter not relevant is his discrimination claim that he tried to bring in the district court.
And, Your Honor, that could be true, except I would point the court to the appendix at page 66, 67, and 68. All of which are discrimination allegations. On page 67, in his MSPB appeal, he indicates that he was discriminated or alleges that he was discriminated against based on race, color, age. If you look at page 66, the continuation sheet there talks about Colonel McMaster's and the agency's actions constituted unlawful and prohibited personnel practices in accordance with 42 U.S.C. 2008.
He's saying that he understood, I mean, you're right, this is his complaint before the board, or his appeal before the board, but he is saying, it was my understanding in this settlement agreement that certain things were retained for me to pursue in a discrimination claim sense, and they were sort of carved out, and it points to that, I think sort of ambiguous language in 72 of the joint appendix in paragraph 10 of the agreement. But
if you take your tack, the question becomes, this language is meaningless. The language that you just referred to as far as waiving the EEO complaints is meaningless because he hasn't waived anything. That's the only way that this court can get to that conclusion, is to say that language is meaningless and settlement agreements or contracts, and my understanding is we don't read the language out.
To what your discussion with Judge Clevenger may very well be, that if Mr. Campbell goes back to the district court, he will not prevail. All the claims will be fraud. Why don't we just let that happen? I mean, I have to feel here that
I understand.
That it just, it's a pro se litigant. Let him have his day in court. It may be a short, very unproductive day, but let Judge Brinkema decide this issue, because she was under a misapprehension that you look at the first sentence of the order that it was an MSPB case. And he was trying to have a discrimination case.
And your response is, we can only do that if we violate our pristine oath to guard the jurisdiction of this court with our lives.
Your Honor, this court has never hesitated to guard its jurisdiction. That's all we're asking that it continue to do.
But how are we not guarding our jurisdiction if we do that? Because we recognize we don't have jurisdiction to do anything on the merits here.
Correct.
All we can do is adjudicate the propriety of the transfer from the Eastern District to here.
That's
right. That's all we'd be doing.
Right. If your theory is that we can only transfer it back to Judge Brinkman if we decide that she was wrong with her preliminary decision that there was no EEO jurisdiction, and you're saying we lack authority to do that.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, because if you're, this court is to retransfer, that transfer obviously is going to be under 1631. And the second step after deciding that the court doesn't have jurisdiction is to
read the transfer order. I mean, you would disagree, but we could read it, you know, I could take off my glasses and it sort of falls into a little bit of lack of focus. And like I said, I'm not exactly certain that she decided that issue. And now, if I could reach that conclusion, you can't complain.
That's correct. Right? That's right. Although it seems that
I'm going to take my glasses off.
I can't, I'm not that brave. We can't, I think, just ignore what she said in the order. Now, is the order a model of clarity? I will admit that it is not. But it seems pretty plain what she was saying. I know that, Your Honor, but I owe candor to the court. And I can stand here all day and not make something other than
what it is. But it says, Mr. Boyer, it says right in the order, the main body of the order says, third line, in which plaintiff appeals the decision of the Merit Systems Protection Board affirming his 28-day suspension. Now, that was not what he intended to bring to the district court. He intended to bring his discrimination claims. Now, granted, it's, as a pro se, it's an artful word.
Right, except, Your Honor, we have to go back to the fact that his right to sue letter was based upon the MSPB decision, not upon the EEO decision. Because the EEO said, we don't have any jurisdiction because there is no surviving EEO.
Well, this is what you're making. What you're saying seems to me to be an argument that might very well be very effective in the district court.
Yes, I agree.
Maybe it will.
Except that the district court has already decided, when she said it here, that there's no jurisdiction in the district court. So what this court, in effect, would be doing is saying, we don't have jurisdiction, but we think you do have jurisdiction, despite what you said in the first place.
We don't have jurisdiction, but we think you may have jurisdiction.
But she's already said
you're the right person to decide.
Yeah. But she's already said
she did. First instance.
That's correct.
We're kind of going in circles now.
Well, that's it, except that's why under Christensen, in the law of the case, you avoid this circular problem by putting the thumb, if you will, as you mentioned earlier, on the scale in favor of the transfer.
You mentioned Christensen, you realize, of course, it was a Supreme Court case.
That's right.
Is this a case in which the department has already made the decision that you'll, seek a petition for a rehearing in the bank here and then ask the SG to take it to the Supreme Court?
I don't believe the SG has been consulted yet, sir.
I gave you some free advice.
I understand. And are there any further questions? If not, I'll just wrap it up. I mean, it really is pretty straightforward. The district court, we believe, said she didn't have jurisdiction, which is why she transferred here. This court clearly doesn't have jurisdiction, so it seems to be that the only result that makes any sense is to dismiss Mr. Campbell's complaint. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Court. Ms. Belcher? As I said, you have your 3 minutes of rebuttal if you need it.
Thank you. We agree with Mr. Morgan that this is a very straightforward matter. Under Section 1631...
If Judge Brinkman decided that there was no Title VII jurisdiction in court, it is a very straightforward matter. Wouldn't we have to dismiss this appeal?
As you, Your Honor, acknowledged earlier, her transfer order is not final appealable order. And according to Section 1631...
It's not a final appealable order in the Fourth Circuit.
No, and it's also not a final dismissal order. It's a transfer order. And under Section 1631, this court has to make a determination that that court has competent jurisdiction under the statutes governing Title VII.
But you're saying there's been no final ruling by the district court on the jurisdiction issue.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm also
saying you're saying there has been a high sign or a gotcha indication of what she thinks, but she hasn't because she hasn't dismissed the case for want of jurisdiction, there has not been a holding.
Yes, Your Honor, there has not been a final order. And under Section 1631, this court needs to find that it is a competent jurisdiction, that there is competent jurisdiction in the district court, which under the provisions governing Title VII, there is jurisdiction.
Are you asking us to make a determination that the district court does have jurisdiction? This gets back to what we started with.
No, Your Honor, not that it has jurisdiction, but that the transfer order itself is clearly erroneous and would work a manifest injustice. To the extent that this court is concerned about the issues raised by Mr. Morgan concerning administrative exhaustion and what this district court may or may not have determined, affirmative defenses, according to Zipes, which we cited in our brief, those are not jurisdictional prerequisites. The statutes governing Title VII put forth that the district court does have jurisdiction, so to the extent that this court is concerned, those other matters are not jurisdictional prerequisites. And as you acknowledged, the transfer order itself is not a final appealable matter. Our client is proceeding pro se in the district court. He has yet to adjudicate his Title VII claims. All we ask this court is to retransfer those matters to the district court and to let Mr. Campbell have his day in court. If the court has no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Belcher. Ms. Morgan, thank you again. The case is submitted.